Hey everybody, this is another episode of The Blind Entrepreneur. I'm with a friend of mine, his name is Guy Vinson. He is the founder of Publishizer, which was actually funded by 500 startups in Silicon Valley. He's originally from Australia. He's calling us from Silicon Valley. I thought I had cool hair. He has way cooler hair than I do. Without further ado, Guy Vinson, please tell me who you are, what you're all about, and what is your story?
Thanks, Jonathan. I think you pretty much said it. Running a company called Publishizer, been working on it for almost 2 years now. It's a book pre-orders platform, and recently we pivoted to connect authors directly with publishers through pre-orders, something that we call crowd publishing. We're the first company to try to do this. We raised some funding earlier this year, and hopefully we'll be able to keep building the product and get more books published.
So tell me a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey. Where did your passion come from? Where did it all begin?
Sure. So some people like to say when they sell stuff as a kid, and when I was five, my mom had a massive lemon tree, which I would go around selling lemons for 10 cents each around the neighborhood. And it did really well. I had enough money to buy Nintendo games, and my friends got jealous. So there were so many lemons. Eventually, we had a little team of us going out, selling lemons, and kind of pooling the funds. So that was the first entrepreneurial journey. During university, I had another startup. It's called Flogged. It was an e-commerce platform for Facebook. I didn't build it. I acquired it, but we're not talking huge amounts of money here. Sure. From some guys who had built it, and I proceeded to drive it into the ground. Just learning how little I knew about programming was basically my weakness. The beginnings of Publishizer was really just a really random experiment. I was curious about ebooks and looking for ways to experiment with Google AdWords. And I self-published an ebook about early rising. It was called Waking Up Early. I found like a lot of traffic for it, low cost per click, big problem. A lot of blog posts were like writing about it. And the only book written about it was by Benjamin Franklin like a couple of hundred years ago. So self-published it. It did pretty well, but I learned how hard it was and time-consuming to self-publish. Fast forward, after like leaving Australia, I ended up running the digital division of a book printing company in Singapore. And it was essentially a startup, but within a larger corporate kind of organization. Amazing experience, spent a couple of years, grew the team, like had a team of 3-4 sales guys, 20 engineers, quality control, just building interactive children's book apps mostly. And a couple of government contracts in Singapore. And it was really there that I was coming across a lot of independent content creators who wanted to get their book published, and they didn't have the money to do a print run because it's pretty expensive if you want to print like 1,000 books or more. So I'd tell them, why don't you go out and crowdfund it? Like Kickstarter's rising, and Seth Godin had just done some huge campaign for his book, The Icarus Deception. They said, yeah, but I still need to like figure out how to do the editing and the design and the printing, and can you help me with that? So the idea came, like, what about a crowdfunding platform for authors that helps them with all the other stuff? After quitting my job in Singapore, I had some savings, so I hired some guys, a guy in Singapore. He's German, but an amazing Python programmer. Him and his partner in Germany built the initial MVP. I moved, that's like the minimum viable product, which is the just earliest version of the software. I moved to India for 6 months just to like bring the costs down. Sure. Singapore was the most expensive city in the world at that point in time to live. And it is crazy. Whereas India, I was renting an office for the equivalent of $20 a month.
Wow. Not bad.
Yeah. So that extended the runway from the savings. We built the initial platform, got a couple of campaigns launched. The first one was a book called The Backpacker Chef. A lady raised $5,000, printed 1,000 copies, had a really great result, did some children's books. We had our first breakthrough after I went back to Singapore to try to, you know, get more like business type people on the platform. And a guy called Scott Bales did a campaign which raised $30,000 in pre-orders, became an Amazon bestseller, got a lot of press, and yeah, it's kind of been growing from there.
So what is it like working in different countries? What were some of the best countries that you've actually worked in? And, you know, I feel like a lot of people that are trying to cut costs, similar to yourself, what advice could you give to these to those people?
So probably, I mean, for me, the three best places, like the digital nomad kind of capitals, would be Chiang Mai in northern Thailand. I was there earlier this year for 2-3 months before 500 startups. I'd probably still be there now if not for 500 and their investment. But Ubud in Bali has some amazing co-working spaces. The more famous one is Hubud, the hub in Ubud, which is just beautiful and amazing. And after 500, we went, myself and my partner, we went down to Mexico City, just planning to go for a short trip, but we decided to spend as much time there as we could because there are also amazing co-working spaces. And Mexico City is a beautiful, incredible city. Most people don't know just how awesome it is.
Interesting. And so did you basically ran your business because it's not bound by talking to people in person, but you mainly use the Wi-Fi that was given to you at these co-working spaces in order to what, network through using specific platforms? Are you emailing? Like, are you using LinkedIn? Like, what are you using?
A whole lot of stuff. Everything's online. So all of our engineering is managed through Trello, like leads and, you know, working through the sales process. I also manage it through Trello. Our team is remote. We've got Toby in Germany, Martin in Singapore. I'm wherever. Recently brought on our first hire, a guy called Lee. He's in Vegas.
Nice.
Everything can be done online. Like, there's still a lot of calls. I still, you know, need Wi-Fi in a working place so I can have good calls, especially if they're, like, quite a well-known person. You don't want shitty Wi-Fi, which breaks out the time.
Sure.
But yeah, the work can be done online, and I definitely recommend people in the early stages of your startup to, you know, keep your costs low, whatever funds you have, make it stretch as long as you can. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've been doing that for, probably close to 3 years now since leaving Singapore. And there are advantages to spending longer periods of time, like 3 to 6 months in a certain location, just to get in the workflow and have some stability and be more productive.
Now, tell me a little bit about your struggles early on in creating this. We don't have too much time, but just go into a couple of them.
Definitely, like, being a non-technical founder, you need to wrap your head around programming and, like, frameworks and front-end development, CSS, JavaScript. You need to really familiarize yourself with how that stuff works. If you're working with a team of engineers, let's say it's a tech startup, that's very important for you to wrap your head around so you know what you're doing. Luckily, you know, our engineers are amazing and they take care of most of it, but it helps to know if it's a smart feature to implement or if it's going to be an engineering nightmare further on down the line. An initial struggle was just trying to build stuff that I thought was cool but actually wasn't valuable to our users. An example was I had this idea of a contextual commenting system, which is like Medium today. You can click on a paragraph, you can comment on that. We built that and it was really difficult, really hard, and probably put a couple of engineering months down the drain because our users just didn't use it. Financially, definitely, like earlier this year in Chiang Mai, the company funds, like, it was making money, but not enough to grow, not enough to hire people or to invest in, marketing tactics or whatever. So that was a struggle. I had a couple of close calls where I was just like, I don't know if this is going to work. A couple of random serendipitous events resulted in, the opportunity to move to Silicon Valley and get some money in the company. There's always struggles.
And I think it's very interesting how things always work out. Like, once you're on your last leg, something crazy happens and you're right back at it again. But tell me a little bit about one of your biggest failures that you've had thus far, and how did you overcome it, and what did you learn from it?
This is in the context of Publishizer or like context of anything?
It could be in life, yeah. I guess what was the... I'm more interested in learning the first scene that came into your mind.
Well, okay. So if I think of like some of the worst periods in terms of trying to build a new company and having like relationships, like that's a hard thing to manage.
Sure.
So, I mean, there have been plenty of fails in the company itself, but I guess something that I learned this year from spending maybe like too much time just on the company and neglecting other elements of your life, if you neglect relationships close to you, that's going to affect you personally. It's going to affect your own productivity, and that's also going to affect the company.
Sure.
So I'm glad that, you know, like I had a moment of awareness in Cuba where I was just like, you're in a beautiful, amazing country. Like, it's just a spectacular culture. There's no Wi-Fi, so you're totally detached from your work. And I was just this like miserable, anxious, like prick.
Right.
Like, I was there with my girlfriend and her friend, and I wanted to get work done, but I couldn't because there was no Wi-Fi and,
right,
you know, things like that. And I just realized after a while of just being miserable and stressed out about not being able to work, like, there are other things in life that you need to take care of. And, you know, as soon as I kind of, like, let that anxiety go, I found I could think clearer, and there are actually things that you can do without Wi-Fi as well, like
sure,
wireframing or content writing, stuff like that.
Right, right. And I think that's a real problem that we have nowadays. You know, people are always looking at their phone, even when it's walking down the street or whether it's driving their car, although I heavily do not promote that. but I think that's a real problem. So tell me a little bit about the habits that have made you successful thus far, whether it was, you know, your experiences in Cuba not having Wi-Fi or your day-to-day activities. What has what is that habit that's made you who you are today?
Okay, so I mean, one of my favorite habits is definitely like waking up early, whenever possible. Like, just love being in a place for a while where you can develop those rituals. A recent example, so after Cuba, went down to Colombia. It was a short trip, just a week. And during that entire week, I was waking up at like 5 a.m., going running or trying to run because of the altitude in Bogota. You're out of breath after like a minute.
Sure, sure.
Coming back, like cooking breakfast, doing some stretching, coming up with your focus for the day, coming up with the list of your top priorities, and then just diving headfirst into your work. And not doing any social media, not checking any of that stuff. Something which I kind of adopted from Tim Ferriss is trying not to check your emails until later on in the day, like maybe 11 a.m. or even after lunch. That way you can focus on your most important tasks, you know, whether that's coming up with your new wireframes or figuring out an article you're going to post. Or for us for right now, it's reaching out to potential investors. Emails can kind of suck you in and you don't accomplish your most important tasks. So for me, I find having a morning routine very valuable.
Interesting. So, you mentioned briefly about the one resource in particular that you use is Trello. What other resources that do you use throughout your day?
I try to keep my tools to like a minimum wherever possible. Like, still a fan of good old fashioned like Word documents, Excel documents. Like all of the wireframing, I do most of the wireframing and the design for Publishizer. I use Keynote, which is like PowerPoint.
So there, much better, right?
There are all of these amazing. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of amazing tools out there. But for online collaboration, Trello works well. Tried Slack, I think it's cool, but you know, we're pretty invested in Trello. Yeah, like most of the Google apps are valuable. Google Drive for sharing documents.
Do you use anything for personal use? You know, because you said that you were struggling at one point for like a balance of like work life. Do you do anything that's like, you know, during your downtime that you use that you love?
Downtime is mostly I try to read wherever I can. Like, that's still one of my great passions. Yeah, I mean, the major tools I would use, even in my downtime, like just right now, is there's a lot of stuff that needs to be done, so it doesn't really exist a lot. Mm-hmm. But on Apple, they have their reminders and notes. So whenever like I have a challenge, I just jump onto notes and just let it all just come out and just see if any solutions might come out of just that free form writing process. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I find having a checklist useful. And it kind of gives you structure as well. It's satisfying to work through that and just like tick them off and Absolutely. Get all those little things done.
Couldn't agree more. So you mentioned that you're an early riser. Tell me, you know, about your life as an entrepreneur. When does it usually start? When does it usually begin in terms of start working? And when does it usually end?
Mm. Mm. So like when I'm managed to get into the routine, normally starts about 6 a.m. I'll like try to get a bit of, you know, some of those morning rituals done before starting work. And, you know, I used to work until pretty late, like definitely during the 500 Startups program, I'd be in the office until 8, 9, 10, 11, midnight, catch the last Caltrain home to San Jose normally, or miss it and sleep in the office, which happened plenty of times. Right. But, yeah, it's not really good for you. Like, when I reflect back on that period, there was a lot of hanging out in the office with the other founders in 500 Startups. You know, having a couple of beers. I mean, it's great. You get to talk with them and learn more about their companies and what's working for them and talk about the problems that you have. So that was great, like, socially, but probably didn't need to be in the office because then you have this weird tension of I should be working, but I'm having a beer or hanging out with some other people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, now I try to finish work before dinner, like 5:30, 6 p.m., normally cook dinner with my girlfriend wherever we are. We love to cook. And then that's it. You know, get to bed early, back at it the next morning.
Very cool. Do you feel as if that there's a rhythm that you have to be on in order to be successful? And if so, what does that rhythm look like?
It definitely helps. I mean, I would be the first to say over the last, like, it's hard to get into a rhythm when you are constantly traveling. So over the last 3 months, like, since 500 finished, it was like went up to Canada, back to the Valley, off to New York, went to Mexico City, where then was it up to Cuba, down to Colombia, back to New York, went to Singapore for 3 days for a conference and back to New York, and then down to Austin and now back here. And it's a lot of moving around and it's a lot of time wasting. You know, so I do find it's more productive when you are able to commit to a longer period of time, at least a couple of months in one place, just to get into that rhythm and get into those routines, because that's when you'll have the most productive output.
How long does it usually take in order to get, like, you know, you're traveling from place to place. How long does it usually take in order for you to get back into that rhythm?
It can be pretty fast, okay. Depending on the availability of co-working spaces and where you're going to live and how to optimize it so you can live and work really closely and minimize any kind of commuting time or anything like that.
Do you usually do that beforehand? Do you usually map that out beforehand?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's normally booked ahead of time. Yeah. So I made the decision to actually, you know, cut back quite massively on the traveling. So I've booked a co-working space in Ubud in Bali next year, 6 months. Accommodations booked, co-working is booked, flights are booked, like, it's done. Nice. So that's just like one less thing you have to worry about, and you can kind of plan ahead accordingly from there.
Very cool. I have two more questions. One of them is, you know, the blind entrepreneur is an individual who doesn't know exactly what to do, but they have an idea. And, you know, also they have this false ideology of that, you know, they see people like Mark Zuckerberg and you know, Uber being evaluated at, you know, at $70 billion, I think it is at this point. And then they see that, like, wow, all I need is a really good idea in order to become successful. So, you know, what are three pieces of advice that you'd give to somebody that's either just starting out and wants to become an entrepreneur?
I mean, just get started. Like, stop trying to come up with the perfect idea. It doesn't exist. publisher as it was very half-baked when I got started, but it's like dive into the wireframes, find some engineers, build an MVP, like just get something out there. So just get started. Two, I'd say focus on selling something. Like if you're not selling something, then you're not really going to be getting valuable market feedback. And, you know, selling could mean signups, it could mean something else. But for me, I'll find that once you try to sell something actively to someone, you figure out very quickly whether you're creating something with value or not. And if what you're building isn't valuable and people aren't going to pay for it, then you know you have to, like, change your direction. Third would be, like, just keep at it. I've been at Publishizer for quite a while now and had a couple of close calls where, you know, I did feel like giving up. But, you know, like, just ride it through. You know, don't make any drastic decisions. Give yourself, like, a week. If you need to take a week away from the company or whatever you're working on, just take it off. Like, it's not going to collapse. It's probably not that important if you're still at that early stage. People's lives aren't going to be at stake, most likely. So give yourself time to just, like, ride through those periods of doubt, and you'll probably find, you know, new ideas come, or you might have a different approach you can try, and then get straight back into it. Like, don't waste time. Just constantly try to push things out into the world.
I'm going to add another question here, but it sounds like, do you meditate at all, or do you find that valuable?
Okay. Sometimes I do get into it. I find yoga almost like meditation. I am quite a regular yoga. I do a very simple lean yoga, like 15-minute kind of routine, a couple of sun salutations, some stretching. You know, I do sometimes do some gratitude exercises. Sounds kind of corny, but...
Hey, you got to find what works.
Yeah, I do find it kind of puts me in a good space for the day. And I get my best work done. So, you know, be grateful for your health. Be grateful for the loved ones around you. And, you know, be grateful for the opportunity to work on these projects that you're working on. Like, not everyone has the opportunity to pursue a company or trying to build something. That's a luxury.
Sure.
So, but yeah, meditation, like, I plan on getting more regular with it. But I find keeping it simple, like, even a couple of minutes, just sitting quietly, focusing on your breath is enough. One tip which I'll offer, and probably my last tip, I was lucky to meet Cheng Mei Tun. He's Google's Jolly Good Fellow is his official title. Mm-hmm. And he created the Search Inside Yourself program. Mm-hmm. So I met up with him and he said that, you know, focus on one breath a day. That's it. Like, if you can focus on one breath, then it will just give you that presence. And most likely you'll end up focusing on more breaths. And hopefully you'll meditate for a couple of minutes. So yeah, I found that very useful.
Very cool. The last question is my favorite, and I'm very curious to hear your answer because of all of your world travelers, all your world travels, and also your love for cooking. So imagine that you had the worst day of your life, and you're down in the dumps, and you're extremely sad and depressed, and you know maybe on the verge of tears. But let's be honest, entrepreneurs don't cry. that's not true. But so you're trying to get like a pick me up. You know, and you want to make your day that much better. What's the first thing that you're going to grab to eat in order to rise your spirits?
I'm a big fan of berries. Like, okay. I love fruits. There's something that I do which is very therapeutic. It's probably sounds weird, but I love to make fruit mandalas. So okay. I'll like carve up fruits and berries. Obviously, make it look really pretty, and I'll kind of make a symmetrical round fruit platter. But, yeah, it's like, it's therapeutic, it's meditative, it's creative. You can't do anything wrong. It always looks good because it's fruit and it's colorful. Sure. And then you have this amazing source of energy afterwards.
That's so cool. That's a great answer.
Started putting some on my Instagram, but I'll probably never get around to doing more.
Well, I'd love to see them. And I'll follow you on Instagram as well. I honestly say that's the most unique answer so far. Everybody else has been like, you know, fatty foods, cheesesteaks, whatever it may be. But berries, I totally
it's
respect
for that as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. So just tell everybody how people can find you, how people can contact you, and you know, where they can find your business at.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, if you are working on a book or you're interested in getting published, my email is guy@publishizer.com. you can check out Publishizer, just publishizer.com, just to check it out, sign up, it's free, play around with it, let me know what you think. Yeah, that's probably the best way to contact me.
Cool, and all of your contact information is going to be in the show notes, so they can contact you there as well.
Yeah,
Guy, I really appreciate your time. It means a lot. Continue kicking ass, and we'll talk soon.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jonathan.
See ya.